This is the Fatherhood Unlocked podcast, and my name is Dan Doty. I'm a father of three, an outdoorsman, and a meditator, and supporting dads to be the best version of themselves is my highest calling. Fatherhood is the biggest rite of passage in a man's life. It's our biggest opportunity to grow up, to wake up, and to learn who we actually are. I believe that a father's love is the biggest missing vitamin on the planet. This podcast is intended to be a lightning rod to call men to action, to create community, and to set a new tone and standard for what fatherhood means. Welcome to Fatherhood Unlocked. Welcome, humans. Are we still human out there? Have we turned into robots? Yet, I hope not. I don't think I have. Sometimes I won't. Sometimes I worry about it a little bit. I'm so excited to introduce today's show. Britta Bushnell is the author of Transformed by Birth. So just take that title in for a second. Transformed by Birth. That's pretty obvious to see how that happens for a mom. But if you're a dad, it's also obvious to see how that is true for dads as well. Birth transforms us fundamentally, completely, and spits us out the other side. I think maybe in the opposite direction of robots. Maybe that's our antidote to becoming robots, is we just have to have more kids. Britta is a wife and mother, author of Transformed by Birth, veteran childbirth educator, celebrated speaker, mythologist, specialist in childbirth relationship and parenting. She got her PhD, and what I love is that Britta works with expecting parents at a deep level, on the level of understanding that this is an initiation, a rite of passage, and such a massive transition for all of us to go through. And I'm really, really just buoyed and honored and grateful for how she speaks to partnership and the dad's role and just general, the whole spectrum of what it takes to have and raise a kid these days. So I'm super fired up for this conversation. We will get to the interview with Britta in just a minute, but first I want to share some news from the Fatherhood Unlocked universe here, the FUU, the fuck you universe. We have opened the doors to Fatherhood Ready, which is a both deep and broad, substantial platform to support expecting dads as they lean in to take the biggest job of their lives. One thing we know for absolute sure is that fatherhood is expecting more of us today than it ever has. That's a big statement. It's certainly expecting more of us than it did a generation ago. When we were young and we looked to our fathers, our job is bigger today. There's far more expected of us. We believe this is really good news. But the bad news is that there are very few resources in place to help dads step up to the task in front of them, in front of us. And this is true for me. And so what we've done is we've begun by addressing this right at the inception point of a dad's career, of a dad's life. And that moment, maybe you can remember, if you are a father, you are a parent, think back to that moment of how it felt as this huge event was coming up. It's really interesting. When I reflect back on it, I think I was quite naive. I was terrified. I was excited. There was like all of these things going through my mind and my heart. But what I didn't expect was how fucking giant of a transition it was. I really didn't expect it, even though maybe people kind of told me and some people really told me, but it was hard to hear. So part of what we're doing with Fatherhood Ready is really getting the attention of expecting dads and just laying things out very simply. We give a very clear path to what you need to take care of, and we line things out in three specific pillars. The first pillar is readiness for pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And there's a handful of modules about this, and it's the best education that we could find. We bring in some birth professionals to give us the nitty-gritty details, and we give you tools. We have an amazing organizational planner that aligns out all of the different things you need to buy and get prepared and all of that. So that's module one. It's just getting your shit together and getting ready for the thing to happen. The second module is strengthening and preparing your relationship for becoming a parent. This is absolutely massive. And so we have an entire module based on with challenges for you and your partner to take, things like defining your family values together, setting a vision for yourself as parents, having some hard conversations in preparation for this, in just giving you an opportunity to invest in your relationship before the stakes get higher, because they're about to. And then the last one is a personal growth module, which recognizes that expecting dads are about to step into the biggest personal growth chunk of their life. And it's long and it's gnarly and it's big and it's profound and it's exquisite and it's also painful. And so this is to give dads a heads up and to lean in and get their head and heart set in the right direction before the big event. So that's Fatherhood Ready. We are going to be singing this on the airwaves and all over the place as long as I can imagine. I'm deeply, deeply aligned with this. I'm deeply excited about it. So I just have a very vulnerable ask right off. If you know any expecting parents right now, pass this along, pass this podcast along, pass along Fatherhood Ready. You can sign up for our newsletter, all that stuff. So we're just in a phase of getting the word out right now. Okay, thank you for hearing that. And I'm super excited to share this interview with Britta Bushnell. Good morning, Britta. Thank you. Like, even more than normal, thank you for being here today with my sloppy scheduling. So I appreciate
it. Dan, I'm excited to be here with you this morning. And, you know, I'm kind of a 10 a.m. and beyond is when I schedule my work so that I have my morning to do my rituals and my prep. And I was like, oh, but for Dan, I'll do 8 a.m. I will. So
I appreciate
that. We're both stretching here this morning. Yeah.
Well, a little personal thing before we get into the topic. From our short connection so far, I like looked up to you both in the work you do. I love everything that I've seen and read and heard so far. I feel very values aligned, but also just as a professional, right? Like what you just said, I am like adamantly attempting to give myself that 2 hour, you know, I'm trying to get to that 10 a.m. start. And I also, you mentioned you're on sabbatical and I like need a sabbatical or a break so bad, but I'm like not quite there. So I'm sort of, I don't know. I feel I'm trying to learn by osmosis here too.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing, right? To be a entrepreneur or a solopreneur and a parent, mm-hmm. and a partner, spouse, and to remember to tend to and fill our own cup.
Absolutely.
It's a lot, all of it, isn't it? A lot.
Yeah. Well,
it takes practice just like everything else to have those moments of, okay, my boundary is a 10 a.m. start. And you and I, you know, went back and forth multiple times to try and find a time and had to do some rescheduling. And so finally I was just like, you know what, let's make this easier. and so I'm really good at holding that 10 a.m. start time. And I give myself flexibility rather than rigidity, even around that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, let's get transformed by birth. I think you have
I don't know about you, but I'm not giving birth today. That's not.
No, I'm not either.
This episode. Yes.
In fact, I'm going in. This is a little too much information, but I'll just say it. In fact, I'm going in for my appointment for a vasectomy today. So I'm like on like very adamantly not giving
birth. Check it out. But that's a threshold.
Yeah, it totally is.
Absolutely. That's a threshold. And really, for me, transformed by birth is taking work that I view. My real passion is around transformation.
Yeah.
And birth happens to be the vehicle that I get to utilize that work.
Yeah.
But the work is really about transformation. And so you are absolutely in on the precipice of another type of transformation and rite of passage as a man and a father to mark that.
Absolutely. And that's
as a partner to take that step that is like, I got this now.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little late to the party, and I feel some guilt about that, but it's happening. But so I'm on, I feel like there's, if there's like cosmic radio stations that like subliminally beam stuff down, like using, being passionate about transformation and using birth as a vehicle, like that's the party that, that I want to be at and that we're building here.
Which is how we ended up talking about your vasectomy within the first few minutes of being on this recording together. I mean, because we've got that cosmic connection, if you want to call it that. Yes.
So I've read your bio and we've talked a bit, but for the listeners, just share just like the heart of the journey that brought you to do the work that you do.
Yeah, I mean, there's the short version and the long version, but the short version is that I was a yoga teacher. And when I became pregnant with our firstborn, that was like, oh, yoga, and I'm pregnant. And so I started teaching prenatal yoga. And that really brought me into a space of, oh, I really like this audience. I like this, this world. And then as my journey through parenthood continued, working with the pregnant population just was enlivening for me. I've always been pretty passionate about change and growth. My husband and I met each other in a yoga class, and our relationship and our love bloomed for one another, mat by mat, next to each other, in the container of change and growth and shifting. And so all of that led me into working for a long time in birth, which then led me to a point where I was like, I'm going to change and shift out of birth, and I'm going to go to grad school, and I'm going to get a PhD in mythology with an emphasis in psychology. So the stories and myths and metaphors that are about us that help us understand ourselves. I'm like, that's what I want to do. And then in grad school, I found that I was wearing birth colored glasses. And so every course that I took, everything I was engaged in, I was looking through the lens of birth. And I found that rather than stepping outside of working with birth, I went deeper in and found that there was more I wanted to be doing. And that led, my dissertation was the basically the research phase of writing my book that was published in 2020, which is Transformed by Birth.
Amazing. I'm so curious. I haven't ever looked into this, but I would imagine there's myths from around the world that not only talk about birth in general, but are there like salient myths or stories that get told down? I'm sure there are.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to parlay that into what myths are we operating? What is our current culture? Like, what's the overstory or understory there?
Yes. So there are absolutely myths that are out there. Looking at Greek myths, there's a bunch that are very interesting. I will just address two quickly because they relate to some of what we're talking about. One is the birth of Athena from the head of Zeus.
Okay.
Which is like, how do we remove birth from the space of the body and the messiness of nature and make it all an intellectual, patriarchal kind of engagement? Oh, well, here's a myth for that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
That does show up, you know, oh, we'll just take a hammer to the head and oh, there, you know, and Zeus has birthed a couple of babies from one from his head, one from his thigh, you know, a few things. Yeah. And then the other one that shows up a lot in my work that I talk about is the birth of the twins, Artemis and Apollo.
Okay.
And Artemis and Apollo, there's a whole backstory about their conception and their birth, but when finally their mother is able to give birth to Artemis first, she comes out, you know, as gods do, fully formed, right? And the very first thing that she does is midwife the birth of her twin brother, Apollo.
Interesting.
So her very first act is as midwife. Huh. And she is I use Artemis and Apollo a lot to talk about what's going on in birth, because Artemis is the goddess of the wilderness. She is often referred to, one of the main words used to describe her is untamed.
Mm.
She's wild. Mm. She's at home in the wilderness. She speaks with the moans and grunts and howls of the animals. She's a moon goddess. She's fiercely protective of her privacy. These are all things that the birthing body has needs for as well.
Totally.
Yeah. Wow. And her twin, Apollo, is considered the god of culture. He is the god of music and poetry and those things that separate humans from animals.
Huh.
He is
wow.
all things that are ordered and cultured, and he's associated with laws and order, and his son is the god of medicine, modern medicine. And so all of these things really associate him with civilization.
Hmm.
And we live in a highly Apollonian overculture. We like things tidy and ordered. He's a sun god. We like things well lit and clear. We don't like things mysterious. We want to know them. All of those things. We live, you know, with encyclopedias in our pocket in the form of smartphones. Mm-hmm. We love our to-do list. We want to know how things are going to happen. And the body, the animal nature that is represented by Artemis is really representative of that in childbirth, that we are a body, we are an animal body, and it is wild, it is untamed, it prefers privacy, it is cyclical in time. The moon it changes. It's connected to the seasons and day and night, whereas the sun is constant. Right.
Yeah.
And that is what the overculture prefers. So when you ask, what are the myths that we are living in now? We are living in an overculture that idealizes the energies and preferences of that Apollonian side of things. So we prefer control and certainty. We prefer, I mean, we have gods of technology.
Yeah.
Technology is godlike. And we venerate information and technology, meaning that we think that in order to move through a rite of passage like birth, like becoming a parent, that we can move through those rites of passage successfully with information and technology. Because those are the things we're familiar with utilizing.
Yeah.
And it shocks us and reverberates a kind of nervous system response of, oh my God,
yeah,
when those are not enough.
Yeah, I'm on fire right now.
I mean, and then there's a whole bunch of other ones, but they're all kind of connected.
That's so beautiful and perfect.
That space of Apollo. Basically, all that Apollo represents is what this overculture is about. And birth comes in and says, hey, you forgot about this other twin, Artemis. And she's got a few things to tell you.
That's incredible. So brief story. So I have had the wild fortune to ride shotgun with my wife through three births. And the process of the coming back to the body and the honoring of everything you're naming here, the Artemis, you know, sort of represents, has been, I would say, the most transformative thing in my life. And on a life of a lot of, you know, attempts at transformation, like being immersed in that shit. And we named our daughter Wilderness, right? And our third birth, my wife the midwife didn't get there on time, and my wife delivered her into her own hands in a dimly lit, and it was the most wild, beautiful, mysterious thing I've ever experienced. And it, I mean, it's amazing, right? So as I mentioned, we're building a course and programming for expecting dads, and I'm so fired up about it. And, you know, I guess to use that binary of Apollo and Artemis, you know, we're doing like a little bit of the Apollo, right? Like, you know, let's get our shit. You know, you do need to know what's up. You need to have your stuff in order. But then what we are attempting to offer is somewhat of a pathway toward the honoring of what's really going on.
Yeah. Well, and that's beautiful, because we do need to reach in and access and meet people in that Apollonian realm, because yeah. that is the language that we all are steeped in.
Yeah.
So if we bypass it entirely, we're going to lose people. We're not going to meet them. Mm-hmm. So there is an element of language, information, technology, and as one of my former teachers, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, says, is that fear is hungry for information. And so when we are in fear, we are looking for information. So it matters that we go for what we are hungry for. The challenge today is that we live in an information smorgasbord.
Yeah.
And what happens when you go to a buffet and you're hungry? I don't know what happens to you,
Dan. I don't want to say.
I can tell you that for me, the likelihood that I will overeat is high.
Yeah, totally.
And the likelihood that I will put things on my plate that I'm not even sure why I put them on my plate, because I'm not really hungry for them.
Yeah.
That's what we live in today. And so when we have fear or anxiety, that something like a rite of passage heading into birth and parenthood will elicit, that will mm-hmm. come up. But we now live it at a forever information and technology buffet. We need to take time mm-hmm. to discern what we are truly hungry for. Yeah. So taking that, starting in the place of, yes, of course people need information, and broadening and saying, and what we also need is capacity to face and hold space for and find reverence for the wild, for the unpredictable, for the chaos.
Yeah.
That there is order in the wilderness, but it looks to our Apollonian cultured eyes as chaos, even if it isn't.
Even in the, 12 minutes we've been recording. So I don't know if I shared with you, but my first career was a wilderness guide, right? I think I did know that about you.
Yeah. Right?
So, but in a way, you're not only informing a lot of how I'm, you know, looking at supporting dads, but my work in general has been exactly what you framed out, right? As I feel like I somehow stumbled into the wilderness as a young man. I was like, hey, there's some stuff going on here, you know?
Well, and you probably picked up on the fact that that's where there is medicine for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
As 100%. modern cultured yeah. people, we need yeah. the medicine of the wilderness. And I think it's a beautiful parlay from that work into the work that you're doing with dads and fathers. I mean, it's like, duh, is a part of what's happening in my brain right now.
Yeah. So I'm going to use, I'm going to jump out of the metaphor of the wilderness and use a metaphor that I don't really love, but it makes sense. One of the ways that I talk about the transition into fatherhood for men specifically is, like, imagine you've never stepped on a football field you could use any sport here, but imagine you never stepped on a football field your entire life. And then you have the short window of preparation, and then you're like, in the game for the Super Bowl, right? Like baby comes and everything counts. And it can be such a shock, even just on, you know, just tactical, like managing level, but then this deep undercurrent of growing up, of going through the process of what I see is one of the only clear initiations for men specifically. Like it's we don't have a lot, right? Or we don't have much at depth. And so yeah, and I mean we could probably do 5 podcasts on any one of these things, and I'm curious just for a beat here, the initiation rite of passage for a mom and the initiation rite of passage for a dad, obviously they're physically incredibly different, right? I thought maybe I'd come out with that with a very sharp question, but what do you see is going on? And I'm not trying to compare necessarily, but it seems so obvious there's like a physiological, massive physiological, and there's some physiological changes for dad too. But I just think it's such an awesome opportunity if we can turn our attention to it for dads, because we could use this growing up period, right? It's an initiation that's so needed in my,
well, opinion. I mean, it's, boy, there's 1,000 different places my mind wants to go right now with that response, with your inquiry and question there. And what's coming up for me is, one, I want to acknowledge that I love that you think of this as an initiation. That is the lens through which I work and have studied quite a bit, ritual, rites of passage, and initiations, and seeing the process of becoming a parent as an initiatory journey, I think, is a really important first step.
Yeah,
absolutely. And when I think about what is it for partners, and more specifically male partners, coming into fatherhood, there's a couple of things that come up that I'm gonna dive into, and I'm a little trepidatious, but let me.
Awesome, perfect.
Yeah, but there is an energy of really deeply learning about being there for others.
Yeah.
We do live in an overculture that is Apollonian, that is based in values that are patriarchal, that are
narcissistic,
narcissistic and individualistic, more about if you can do it by yourself, you should. I mean, there's the ideation of independence is built into like the foundation of the country that we are sitting in right now. And that shows up in how we are with ourselves as well. And I believe that that for men in particular, there is some preparation that prepares them for the world to be in the center.
Yeah, exactly.
And going through the rite of passage of parenthood, of fatherhood, for men, I think has some about how do I open, create space, and be not at the center. Not only not at the center, but truly there supporting another. And more than one other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's really about a partner and a child, or children, if there are others. And that broadening of what matters is a really big rite of passage. And it feels different than a wedding. Yeah. I mean, I've officiated a number of weddings. I'm all about the ritual of weddings. I love them. And that has a different piece. And frankly, a lot of men don't get super involved in weddings.
Yeah.
Stereotypically speaking.
Totally.
And so they kind of show up, they do the ritual. Well, real initiatory preparation involves what is sometimes referred to in the field as ritual work. Yep. And ritual work is required for successful rites of passage. Yep. You don't just show up. I mean, there's kind of a misnomer in the overculture here that we can hire somebody to do a ritual for us.
Sure.
Like perform a ritual on me. Well, that's not actually how that works. There when we really look at ritual and initiations from tribal practices and tribal spaces in time and in current day, there is preparation that is involved. There is an involvement and a readying oneself for the journey that is is intertwined. It is essential. And that's part of what the journey into fatherhood that I think you're stepping into so beautifully with the work that you're doing, what makes it so important is allowing a space to say, I will help guide you through your ritual preparation.
Chills. Do you know Richard Rohr and his work? Are you familiar?
Yes.
So his book, Adam's Return, is about male initiation. And he's got the five promises, right? It's, I probably won't get them all, but life is hard. Life's not about you. You're not in control. You're going to die and you're not that special. And, you know, his beautiful thesis there is that traditionally men would have got those messages at a young age and they would have been sort of, that would have been the ethos of stepping into manhood. But in my purview here, what I see, like, we're not getting that. Right, that's not happening. But becoming a dad, it kind of has to. I mean, I suppose of course you can go through it and have it all without it happening. But I think that those things, I call it like a Copernican revolution. Right, it's like I'm the center of the universe. Holy fucking shit, I'm not. You know, and I just want to dial into too that caregiving role, that ability to relate, to nurture, to like. I think it's the biggest gift that men could possibly find themselves receiving if they're willing to receive. I just feel like it's our humanity. I just feel like it's a connection into our humanity. So
absolutely. And it's a big, big transition. And I have a huge amount of respect and empathy and excitement for men who go through it, especially with openness and curiosity and strength for the journey. That is very powerful, and it has the opportunity to deeply transform them 100% in how they engage in the world, as well as huge fundamental changes for them in their relationship and in their connection with their child. And as family holders.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a cool moment in history right now. What's possible, what's going on here with this stuff. And so you work with couples in this capacity and in this transition and transformative role. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's like a million things you're seeing and trends that are going on, but what are you noticing about, I guess, you know, obviously we're centered on dads here, but we don't have to only do that. But my intuition and what I'm seeing is that, you know, especially from a generational lens, right? Like my generation, this generation of dads becoming, it's like a very different deal. How are they doing? How are dads doing? What are you seeing?
Oh, first of all, I just want to say I love working with dads. I love it. My number one favorite thing in teaching classes is the dads. I just love working with dads and partners in general, but watching the distance that men can travel in one weekend is inspiring. because so that leads me to answer your question, which is the readiness of the soil to plant an amazing garden that can grow and thrive is there. Yeah. It's like the soil is just ready. And they walk into my classes, and one of the very first questions is, you know, why this class? And I mean, I sort of have a two-parter, why this class, and what are you hoping to get from it? And generally the responses are, why this class? She picked it. And this is what partners are saying, which is a legit answer.
Yeah, totally.
And one that has value in its own right. Wow. What tells you that what they pick is going to be right for you? Because something in that dad has said, I'm going to do what she says with regard to this.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, let's acknowledge
totally.
That.
Totally.
That's a win. Yeah. But usually they're saying it from a place of, I didn't pick it. I'm just here. Right. And then what do I want to get out of it? They usually will say something along the lines of, I want to feel a little more, you know, a little more prepared. Like, yeah. I don't even know what I don't know, mm-hmm. which is also a beautiful, it's like they are so ready for the seeds to be planted and to grow. Yeah. The openness and curiosity is stunning. I just love it.
Would their partners want or be excited by the dad being more proactive and bringing more things to the table? We have a hunch that the answer is yes, but I also sometimes wonder, would that be like a glitch in the matrix that just like doesn't?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes. And while, and some do. There's certainly, I have had a number of partners who are the ones who register for the class.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Who have done the research and have mm-hmm. decided after their research that mine is the one they want to take, or they spoke to friends. And often when they have been referred to me from somebody else, the reason that they're coming is because they heard that it was impactful for their relationship.
Awesome.
And so they are interested in that piece because there's when I spoke about the fear is hungry for information, one of the places of fear around becoming parents is around the stunning, horrible statistics around what happens to relationships in the majority for new parents, that the statistics are not great.
Can you share some?
I mean, I don't have them right on the top of my head. Yeah. I mean, like the numbers, but it's that one of the most likely time for a relationship to fail is in the first 3 years after a baby's born.
Wow. Okay.
That is one of the most threatening times for the relationship.
I can attest.
I can too. I mean, I've been with my husband for 30 years, and I can tell you, you know, they talk about like the two real critical times are at the first 3 years and then in the period of empty nesting.
Right.
Well, I've now gone through both, and I can tell you, holy shit. Right.
Our daughter's almost three. And I think what's happening is my wife and I are looking at each other like, I think we made it. I think we made it. You know, that's how it feels right now.
But so there is an awareness in the overculture, in the air and the conversations, and we're seeing things, and there is a desire for strong relationships.
Well,
in a way that feels different and new. And a slight awakening to the reality of relationships being work and growth needing rather than the old kind of holdover from a different time of relationship. Yeah. Like think 60s, 50s, 40s, even beyond that, where it was like you got married and then you were together, full stop. You didn't reevaluate ever or get your own needs met through the relationship, or you just were stuck. And these days we're aware now. So that old way kind of gave the idea that once you find your quote unquote person, the rest is done. Yeah. And we know that it's so far from the truth. And so there is an awareness of how do we work to support our relationship? We are on a precipice of great change. A baby is coming into our lives. What can we do to support us is a conversation that is being had now.
Hell yeah. Awesome. I mean, you know, a big part of my training and work with men has been around vulnerability, right? Setting the conditions and modeling vulnerability so that, you know, a deeper connection can be made. And, you know, there's nothing that is more vulnerable in my lived experience than going through a birth together, right? I mean, it is just, it's so many leagues more vulnerable. It's so wildly more raw and real, you know, from our normal thin life. But I mean, again, I guess just like what a perfect, I mean, I guess it's probably natural too. Actually, let me ask this, right? And maybe we talked about this before, but do you know of any other historical instances where males were birth partners or dads were in the process?
No. Yeah. I think we've in 50 years, we've moved from men in the waiting room smoking cigars or out in the fields or, you know, doing whatever it is that they were doing to not only are they in the room, we're expecting them to excel at being the support system. So in about 50 years, we have moved in from you're not even, this is not even a part of your domain, stay away, to you are my everything.
Yeah.
And that is such a tall order that we are holding an expectation that our partner can do all of that for us.
Yeah.
And it's a really big expectation. It's a lot of pressure. And I find like when I work with couples in developing tools for support, where they work together in handling and navigating pain and negative sensation, the tendency is to get for the birthing parent to get critical and hyper directive, and which is coming from their own conditioning in the Apollonian realm.
Yeah.
And wanting their partner to get it right. And that is doing a disservice on so many levels, not just in labor and birth, but also in how we interact and engage in our partnerships. There is a dance here. Mm-hmm. And one of the metaphor that I often lean into is the river and the banks. And so the idea here that when somebody is giving birth and in early postpartum, they step into the river. They are the water. They become this shifting, changing, fluid. Sometimes it's an eddy in the corner going nowhere. Sometimes it's calm on the surface, but underneath the current is so powerful. And sometimes it's, you know, wide and slow and an easy, gentle current. Mm-hmm. But it is water. It is changeable. it is shifting, and water is strong and powerful. What that water needs is supportive banks, responsive banks. And that's what we're asking partners to do, is to come in and be those supportive banks and be there and kind of respond. Oh, okay, you're splashy over here. Let me move over this way a little bit. Oh, okay, you need, you know, but we're not being, you know, I live in Los Angeles and the LA River has concrete banks, right? Has concrete banks. That's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about wild rivers where the banks respond to the water and the water is held and contained by the banks. And that dance is a lot of what we're looking for. But what's tricky is that when partners have not been in there's two things. When partners have not been in a place of understanding polarity and the dance of those kinds of polarities of I am here and I've got you, and how you know I've got you is that you are my full attention. Because that full attention piece is critical. If they're like, yeah, I've got you, but I'm also looking at my phone, that water does not feel held and contained. No. But then the other piece is that we're asking them to contain and hold and respond to water that is an experience they have never touched before. And that is a tall order. I ask in my classes, who here has ever experienced a birth before, human or animal?
Wow. Yeah.
And the only men who ever say they have either grown up on farms,
yep,
or are already dads with another partner. And that's it. Yeah. Nobody else has ever seen birth. And so we're like,
some training.
Yeah. So come on in.
Some training.
Come on in and hold the banks to this thing you've never experienced before. And that's one of the things why training can be really helpful to reinforce those banks. Mm-hmm. And doulas can be really helpful as banks reinforcement.
Yeah.
I do see the value in doulas as banks reinforcement. So it's not coming in and saying, move out of my way, dad. I've got the banks.
Yeah.
You've got the banks and I'm going to hold the sides of you because you also are having an experience.
Yeah.
You are also in a watery experience. And being able to be there and support your beloved while they're going through this wild, wild watery experience can lead to great trust and feelings of connection. And I want to help you as a doula have that for your relationship rather than come in and remove you from it.
Wild. It's also clear to me that capacity. So, you know, imagine a first-time dad is being the banks and being responsive. I mean, it's what my kids need from me too, right? I feel like it's
absolutely
like really good entrance into parenthood. It's the same muscles in a sense.
It absolutely is the same muscle, and it's the same thing that's needed in early postpartum.
Yeah.
Early postpartum is almost as watery an experience as giving birth is, and for some more so.
Yeah, we found it more challenging.
For many it's more so. It's certainly longer lasting.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you is from a wide angle lens pulled back, right? A birth partner's job is to hold those banks and be present and be responsive. Is there any other, like, if there were the most important things for a birth partner to keep in mind of what their role is, what their job is, or things they should pay attention to, right? What's the core beyond being? Yeah.
That is so easy, when, especially when you said to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Pay attention to your partner.
Yeah.
It is about the number one thing a partner can give is their presence. And I don't mean their physical presence. I mean their whole presence.
Yeah.
And that is being truly there. So that means if the partner is responsible for keeping the extended family abreast of what is happening, and so they're on their phone a lot, or they're doing, you know, that removes presence. If the provider walks in the space and instantly the partner gives their focus and attention to the provider, which most of us have sort of that white coat trigger to give our attention to the authority. And we have been trained in our nervous systems to see providers, medical providers, doctors, midwives, you name it, nurses, as the authority. Then we've left the presence of our beloved. If instead we stay present and see the authority as our beloved and help to hold and amplify that authority through our presence and how we interact with folks, our partner will feel like we were absolutely the end all be all to what happened.
Man, that's really clear. That's not complicated. And it's also
it's very challenging.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, being a yoga teacher makes sense here to be able to really clarify this, right? And my background of meditation makes sense, right? I mean, there's an image of me in our first birth where I just had my meditation bench and my wife was in the birth tub, and it was I feel really lucky and grateful, right? Because I had a lot of training to stay focused and be present, right? And I think I also know that this capacity is also within people, right? It's challenging, but, you know, turn the phone off and something miraculous is happening in front of you. I think, you know, guys can get there.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I mean, my experience in what I was talking about regarding the raw soil so ready for seeds to be planted, this is that. They are hungry for it. When I ring the bell and they start holding ice and they're having that experience of prepping for navigating a contraction, like, these men are like, I am here. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do right now, but I am here. And that's where we start. Yeah. That's where we begin. Yeah. Actually, where we begin is everybody holding ice. Everybody awesome. Holds ice because
I love that exercise.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people have just the birthing parent hold ice. And I have everybody hold ice because it acknowledges, and we talk about, partners are having an experience too.
Cool.
And what are they going to utilize? What are the tools? Like you spoke about already having tools to help you with your presence. Mm-hmm. So what are the partners going to do? What, when they go into having something to work with, what do they rely on? And it's interesting because they'll come up with, well, distraction, cracking jokes, you know, and it's like, okay, so these are things that are helping you. And part of what is also important is being there for your beloved. So are those tools that are helping you in support of being there for your beloved as well? And if they are not, what are you going to do instead? Because, you know, or are there times when actually I need to step out and take a walk around the block? It's like, okay, is that allowed?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
And so acknowledging that our own needs matter while showing up and being there in service and support.
What a gift. What a gift. What a gift to everybody, right? Like for a guy to get out of the spreadsheets and boxes to check, the Apollonian stuff. Yeah, it's just a huge gift.
While understanding, wait, can I just finish? One of the very first births I ever attended as a doula, I walked in and the dad had a yellow pad. Remember those? This was a while ago. It was a yellow pad.
I still use them.
And I do too. But nowadays these things are done on phones, but he had a yellow pad with every single contraction she had had written on this yellow pad.
Yeah.
And he handed it to me and I saw it and I was like, I don't need that. But I recognized that he did.
Oh yeah.
It was something he was utilizing, a tool that helped his nervous system feel like he was doing something.
That's a great frame.
He had been steeped in the overculture, the Apollonian overculture of precision and logic and reason. And he's like, numbers, I'm going to write these all down. Right? It made sense. It was what his nervous system needed in that moment.
Yeah.
And it was not supporting her, but it was supporting him. And he was there with her, which was supporting her.
That's cool.
So that's we were able to then move the yellow pad out of the way and see that that was where that was coming from, and offering him the space where I was like, I've now got this. You don't need to keep track of the length and time and frequency. So now you can do the part of just being there with her without tracking in that way. I've got that. And that was able to give him the space to just be there with her in another way without belittling that that tool was a tool for him, but it was also a barrier for real connection.
Yeah, that's a beautiful moment. My whole career has been fueled by the constant, consistent experience of when men's barriers relax and go away. My entire career started with being in the wilderness with fathers and sons and being in there where the conditions were set for the barriers to be removed. That's why I've done all, that was what kicked me off on everything here. But that yellow pad is just like the perfect mundane description of what that feels like. Sort of on the downslope of our conversation here, but I want to talk about the postpartum period a little bit more. And again, with this sort of juxtaposition of the, because like you said, it's longer than a birth. It goes on. Also, work often gets reintroduced. And, you know, I think about some of the both joyful but challenging times was when we had multiple kids, and like, so I'm running a whole household and I'm taking care of two kids and I'm working and all of these things, and I'm still trying to be those banks and be very responsive and attuned to the baby and my wife. And how do we be, and that's a huge question, but we'll keep it a small version for now, but how do we be great postpartum partners?
Yeah. Oh gosh. It's so much, isn't it? Yeah. The way you just described it, I just felt myself kind of back in it. My goddaughter and son-in-law just had their first baby. He's almost 11 weeks old. So he's a freshie, as we like to say, and they're in it. You know, they're in it. And he's going back to work next week, and it's just they're in that space. So it feels I'm really attuned to that right now. And I think there's a few things. One of the things that your question as you narrowed it down was, how do we really be great postpartum partners.
Mm-hmm.
Was that more or less what you were saying?
Yeah.
So I think there's okay. The number one thing is become an active and engaged parent and partner rather than see your the mother, primary parent in the case, as the CEO of parenting.
Yeah, totally.
There is a way that those patterns can get instilled from the very get-go that can be detrimental long-term.
Got to be co-founders.
So you got to be in it together. Yeah. And that means being curious about parenting ideas rather than just being taught and told how to do things by the mom, if we're talking about heterosexual relationships here. So it's being in that place where it's like thoughtful, like, ooh, maybe the baby needs to be changed now. I'm going to proactively take a possibility. I want to proactively try and figure out how to calm and nurture my child. One of the number one things I see in postpartum relationships is the baby's crying. They must need a breast.
Right.
They hand the baby back to, especially if it's a nursing parent, the nursing parent being like, I don't have the equipment. Here you go.
Yeah.
When in fact, that is one soothing mechanism, one method to soothe, one need, but a lot of the time baby just needs soothing and not also nourishment. And so it's what happens when a nursing parent holds a baby and they try and nurse and the nursing doesn't work, the baby doesn't want it. That parent doesn't go, here, dad, hold the baby. I don't know what, I can't figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
They don't, they just figure it out. They do what they can do to figure out how to soothe. And that's what I hear often from parents that they want their partners to do. Mm. They want their partners to have the idea, the mental dance of, I don't know what to do. I'm going to do my best to try and figure out what to do next, even when I don't know what to do next, without being asked, without asking and putting the mental load on figuring out what to do on the parent that has just given birth.
No, I wish I had a time machine. I could send this recording back to me at the first go around. I could have done better.
There's a default piece that shows up. Yeah. My brother and his wife, both career folks, and when they had new babies, they didn't utilize the terms primary parent or default parent. They used the term lead parent because they had periods of time where one was working and then the other was lead parent. And then other times when this parent was working and then this one would become the lead parent. And they required that whoever was the lead parent in that moment was thinking these things forward, because the weight of the default is so heavy. So what partners can do is to not add more weight to the energy of default.
Brilliant. Oh man. I just got way better at my job from talking to you for the last 45, 50 minutes. I'm really, really grateful. There's so much I would love to, so much further I'd love to go. So many more things I'd love to.
Let's do it again another time, because this is a juicy, as I said to you when we first popped on today, that often I don't get to talk about partners. Yeah. Like those aren't the questions that get asked. And it is one of my favorite places to work because I think it is so underaddressed and underrespected. The process and the journey that partners are going through in their own unfolding and transformation into parenthood.
Yeah. I mean, it's the biggest thing in most dads when you ask them, like, what's the thing? What's your biggest thing? It's their kids. It's being a dad, right? I mean, yeah. It's their biggest thing too. I'm so grateful. Thank you for your time. I hope this and all of the collective work here,
thank you for the work that you're doing. It's a underaddressed arena, and I'm thrilled that you and others, you know, you and I share somebody who is also wanting to do this work, who is an apprentice of mine and has worked with you as well. I just love that this is happening and that there is a ripple that has been dropped in the pool and is now reverberating out so that more men and partners will get the support and guidance they need for this initiation process for themselves.
Amazing.
The world will be bettered by it.
Couldn't agree more. I'm guessing you don't need more people coming towards your stuff, but do you have courses coming up? Your book, I think, is available everywhere, right?
Yes, my book, Transformed by Birth, is available in paperback, audio. I read it, cool. So it's my voice. You get to hear in the audio version, and on as an ebook as well. I'm coming out with a online on-demand childbirth prep class.
Cool.
That will be by the end of the year will be available. I do have my professional apprenticeship that happens for 6 months starting in October each cool. year. And then I have my in-person classes, which fill up rather quickly and are in Los Angeles, but yes, I have those.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, this was so wonderful. And yeah, we will have to do it again sometime.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, that is exactly how I feel about that episode. Thank you for listening all the way through. If you want more, we would love to hear from you. We have a newsletter that goes out every week. You can find that at fatherhoodunlocked.com. You can see and hear and read more about our Expecting Dad programming at fatherhoodready.com. If you like the sounds of my voice and just want to hear more about me, you can find me at dandoty.com. Man, we're on Instagram. We're Fatherhood Unlocked on Instagram. And, you know, you've probably heard this before, but a review goes a long way. Passing this on to friends goes a long way. We would love to enlist you in the army that sees a vision of a future where dads lean in, families are whole and intact. We all have a little less bullshit in our lives, and we actually love and live our lives with more freedom and joy and peace. That's what we're after. Thanks for being here.